Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Peter Ward, who's a paleontologist who teaches biology and earth and space sciences at the University of Washington. He has published widely on biodiversity and the fossil record and is an expert on mass extinctions. His award-winning books include Out of Thin Air, Dinosaurs, Birds, and Earth's Ancient Atmosphere, and Under a Green Sky, which pointed out that all but one of the major extinction events in history have been brought about by climate change, the same global warming that occurs today. His latest book is The Flooded Earth, Our Future in a World Without Ice Caps. Welcome to Background Briefing, Peter Ward.
Well, thanks for having me again. It's really been a pleasure in the past.
And Peter, we always talk about catastrophic weather, and here we are being warned now that Atlanta is being hit by a catastrophic second blow from a huge ice storm that stretches all the way from Texas to Virginia. How do we put this in the context of global warming?
Well, I remember just recently in the State of the Union, President Obama did mention global warming, but there was, I think, hoots and boos when he even brought it up because we were in that record cold. And yet, how short-sighted are our politicians? Why don't they at least look to California, which is perhaps in 3 years of drought, one of the greatest droughts in history there? But go down the other side, down under to Australia, where they're not only in years of drought, but they're having heat that's higher than any time in history. Secondly, I've been working in the Philippines this past year, and they had the greatest single typhoon season, typhoons or hurricanes, of course, in their history. And yet, again, the deniers say that because we didn't have many hurricanes this year that there's no global warming. I mean, it's really unfortunate. You've got, as the atmosphere warms, more water vapor goes up into it, and that precipitates out. Plus, you've got crazy weather. Everybody sees this. The circulation patterns that are normal, the high pressure and low pressure, are completely mixed up. And we're heading towards extremes. And these extremes are definitely what we do not want.
So what can be done then to get us past this sort of smug ignorance that's displayed by the deniers and that's echoed by many, including the weather people on television, who seem to be cast largely because of their tight sweaters and cute appearance as opposed to their knowledge of, well, of course, the weather and climate are somewhat different things.
But nevertheless, you're right. It used to be that all weather people, all meteorologists went through a really intensive course in college. I mean, it's extremely difficult because of the high mathematics needed. But on the other hand, what we're seeing now, too, is that politicians are almost universally lawyers. To get a law degree, you need little if any science. And so the great tragedy of our time is that we are giving the power to really understand science and continue science to people who know nothing about science. And it is we're reaping that benefit, if you will, right now.
So give us a sense then of how the fact that the Australian outback is getting so hot that it's even too hot for human existence on the one hand, and Atlanta being hit by a catastrophic ice storm.
Well, certainly weather itself is made up of great circulation patterns in the atmosphere. The planet is heating not in a very symmetrical fashion. The poles are heating much faster than the equator is. Near the equator, because of physics of atmosphere, you can't warm up more than a few degrees, but we know completely well now that the Arctic has been warming to the point that pack ice is disappearing. So once you've changed that differential, you're producing high pressure and low pressure cells that are unlike anything we've seen in the recent past. And just because we have a small cold spot, unfortunately for us, that small cold spot is the southeastern United States. And so it seems like the whole world is the United States. You just go anywhere else and you see that, in fact, the world is way warmer. And this warming is causing these extremes of heat. It's so hot in Australia that the kangaroos are dying.
Again, I'm speaking with Peter Ward, who's a paleontologist who teaches biology and earth and space sciences at the University of Washington. He has published widely on biodiversity and the fossil record and is an expert on mass extinctions. His award-winning books include Out of Thin Air, Dinosaurs, Birds, and Earth's Ancient Atmosphere, and Under a Green Sky, which pointed out that all but one of the major extinction events in history have been brought on by climate change, the same global warming that occurs today. His latest book is The Flooded Earth, Our Future on a World Without Ice Caps. And just let's touch on that idea of these major extinction events. What, there have been, what, five or six in history as much as we've recorded it?
Yes, there are five really big ones, and then there's another seven or eight more moderate extinction events. And in fact, it's very interesting that just today, one of my colleagues, Sam Bowering at the MIT, just came out with a new study showing how quickly the Permian extinction took place. This was the single greatest mass extinction of all time. It is not like the dinosaur killer where they die out quickly. So we didn't really know how long it would take, because this was completely what we call greenhouse extinction. It was brought about by volcanic activity putting a great deal of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. The world then went through the stages that we're just starting now. The end result of this, of a carbon dioxide world above 2,000 parts per million, and remember we're at 400 and rising, is that ultimately the oceans themselves lose all their oxygen, and then a very nasty series of things happen. The bacteria that take over in a zero oxygen ocean produce hydrogen sulfide, very toxic, very poisonous as a consequence. And so the oceans began to fill hydrogen sulfide, and it finally went up into the atmosphere. Well, the Bowering study showed that the 90% extinction, the Permian extinction, took place over about 40 or 50,000 years. So this, again, is not like an asteroid hitting you, and that seems like an awful long time, but in fact it isn't. The fact that you almost made the world uninhabited by animals in that time span tells us that indeed we are ourselves possibly threatened by this. And once again, that world, the Permian world, and the other mass extinctions caused by greenhouse, which are the Triassic, Jurassic, we had one of the Cretaceous, we had one of the Devonian. So all of the mass extinctions except the dinosaur killer were caused by rapid rise of carbon dioxide. They were all volcanic. And yet even new work, our own work in Antarctica, has now shown that even the KT, the famous dinosaur killer, had within a component of global warming caused by a coincident big massive basalt flow, flood basalts they're called. So, I mean, to think that this can't happen again is naive. The first step, of course, is that you get warm enough that you lose all your ice caps, and we're certainly moving towards that right now.
So, but this is different in as much as it's the earlier extinctions were caused by volcanic disasters, etc. This is caused by human activity, is it not? Not that we are in an extinction yet, but we are heading towards it.
Well, carbon dioxide is carbon dioxide. I don't care where you get it. And the second aspect is that one of the most potent and effective of all greenhouse gases, these are the gases that warm, is water vapor. So you've got a positive feedback. As it gets warmer, more water vapor goes into the atmosphere, creating more greenhouse effect, creating more warming. And so we're on this conveyor belt now, and we are marching forward. I don't care where the CO2 comes from, volcanoes or Volvos, carbon dioxide is carbon dioxide. And the greatest single component is coal-fired plants. Last year, there was an estimate that China was putting up to 3 coal-fired plants in operation every week, even if it were one a month. We really do see that this is leading us down the path. We must remove coal as an energy source. I have an ABC, anything but coal. It is the greatest single danger to not us so much, but to our future generations.
But my understanding, Peter Ward, is that the substitute for coal, which is being much touted now and coming online because of fracking natural gas, is in fact, they really haven't quantified the dangers of how much leakage is coming from the fracking process, and they haven't quantified how much leakage goes on in the entire gas grid all the way up into your house. How many times have you smelt gas somewhere? So there's constant leaking, and when you leak natural gas into the atmosphere, it's methane, which is one of the most destructive of global warming gases. So until we quantify how much methane is leaking from the increased use of natural gas, we don't know whether the advantage of burning natural gas over coal are worth it.
Well, that's completely right. We do know what is clean energy, and that comes from, to some extent, hydroelectric, but better yet is wind energy and, of course, solar energy. One of the great fights taking place in the Southwest right now is pitting environmentalist against environmentalist. There's a really sad irony here. If big areas of the Arizona desert were covered with gigantic solar cells, you could produce an appreciable amount of energy needed for the big cities nearby. I mean, we're talking about square miles of solar cells. And yet what that does, it puts the desert underneath it into total shade. That has a huge effect on the species that are there. And right now, the longevity or the existence of one or two lizards and turtles has been sufficient to stop any of this solar power. Look, we're at a state where we're going to need triage. There are going to have to be terrible decisions made. But in the long run, it's the lizards and the turtles are going to be far better off if we have as much solar power as possible.
And what's the chance of this wake-up happening? Because the lobby for natural gas is huge now. The president is touting our energy independence as a result of all of this fracking. I think we're going through a period of dangerous delusion. And, solar and wind, they keep saying it's the energy of the future. And as long as they keep saying it's the energy of the future, it will be the energy of the future. Until you build the very solar plant that you're talking about, a massive solar plant that powers major cities and proves once and for all that it can be done, which we've known that for decades that it could be done, we're not going to get anywhere.
No, unfortunately, I don't want to be a cynic. And if you take the tack that it's inevitable, then people just are given permission to do nothing. I mean, that's really not the case. We have to elect politicians smartly. The problem you just pointed out, however, is really true. The politicians do not want to make these hard choices. Cheap energy is this fool's gold that really trickles through our fingers. There's not going to be cheap energy. The alternative is a really rapid onset of global conditions that will make certain places uninhabitable and will certainly cause the ice sheets to melt to the point that a great deal of human food is covered by seawater. The melting ice sheets is, to me, the greatest single danger, because we barely feed our 7 billion people now, or 6.5 billion, and unfortunately, if we cover up even a 3-foot to 5-foot area that is now down low, that you're talking about the rice fields and especially the big deltas, have that covered by seawater, and you've lost a very significant percentage of human agriculture. And yet it won't stop at 3 feet. If we continue, and we are continuing, there has never been ice sheets when we are at 1,000 parts per million. And we will be there at the latest 200 years from now, whereas a lot of people are thinking, in fact, only 100 years from now.
So what's your sense then of how much time we've got before we reach the point of no return? Because as you pointed out, there are all of these reinforcing feedback loops. You know, for example, melting the tundra releases all the methane and so on.
Well, I see us actually in phase two now. This is the scary part. All of a sudden, these crazy weather patterns are becoming the norm. I mean, no longer do you say, gee, the weather is different this year. It's like, wow, the weather is crazy this year. Well, that's normal. So we're into that pattern. And we're going to see, unfortunately, what agriculture needs is complete predictability of seasons. when you start producing cold when it should be hot, dry when it should be warm, wet when it should be dry, when you stop putting snow in the mountains like the Sierras, California is the great breadbasket, agricultural, vegetable, fruit basket of America, and yet it depends entirely on being able to tap water sources that are stored as snow in the Sierras. They've got to irrigate out of these snow areas, and yet the snow level in the Sierras is coming to the point, is going up so high that they're losing water. So this is a very dire aspect.
So, Peter Ward, then, just in closing, you had mentioned earlier when we spoke that you were going to Australia to do research there on how devastating climate change has been to Australia. What can we learn from that? They seem to be, in many ways, the first in the front line of disaster with all the bushfires. And if there's vast parts of the interior where a human being simply cannot live anymore, and the kangaroos are dying, that would seem to be a real beginning of the end.
Well, it is, but it isn't. And the reason I've chosen to go to Australia, and actually it might be for the rest of my life, I have a university position there, is that I think the people there are better set up to accept facts coming from scientists. It's a well-read, it's a very sophisticated population compared to ours in many ways. And my hope is that I can actually make a difference in at least one place. I just feel like a lot of us are banging our head against the wall in North America right now. Scientists, unfortunately, even the universities have set things up so that scientists are not really allowed for outreach. If you write popular books or articles in the tenure process in the leading American universities, that does not get you any brownie points towards tenure, but just the opposite. So outreach, the things that I do, that is left for the senior scientists. It should be the completely opposite. We should require that every junior scientist going for tenure is writing for the public as well as for his or her colleagues.
Well, but the new Prime Minister of Australia is a global warming denier. I mean, that's not and he's a Tea Party guy, and he may be an anomaly, but he's going to be in there for a while.
Well, I think he is going to be in there for a while, but he's also going to see his power cut off. Look, we know that any political system goes through zigs and zags. Look at Canada. They've had Stephen Harper for a while, and he's actually a very, very right-wing guy. But gradually, what happens is that these people get undercut, and the realization of what climate is doing and how it is changing is becoming so much in our face that denial increasingly will be impossible. And again, there's a place, I think, a smaller population, and I'm just going to give a try of seeing how they would respond to an American coming and helping others. There's so many down there talking about climate.
Well, Peter Ward, I thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Peter Ward, who's a paleontologist who teaches biology and earth and space sciences at the University of Washington. He has published widely on biodiversity and fossil records and is an expert on mass extinctions. His award-winning books include Out of Thin Air, Dinosaurs, Birds, and Earth's Ancient Atmosphere, and Under a Green Sky, pointed out that all but one of the major extinction events in history have been brought on by climate change, the same global warming that occurs today. His latest book is The Flooded Earth, Our Future in a World Without Ice Caps. We're going to take a brief station break and be back with the author of a new book that reads like a nail-biting thriller, but is in fact a definitive account of the ongoing Fukushima disaster.